friends, loyal Samsonites, Sam Rajofsky here, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. This is your friendly neighborhood, poor to middle class, uneducated, lazy POS, reporting for business, or for duty. Well, this is mostly business here. Not real business, but business. Look, this is an actual quote, if you have missed it, from the Inspector General's report. Words written by a lead FBI investigator, spoken to an FBI attorney when they were consoling themselves on November 9th, after Clinton's stunning defeat. There is so much about this report that is not, that is being completely mischaracterized in the media. But good news, you're tuned in here, and so you will get the straight scoop. Don't worry, I'll also get to North Korea. Big week today. What happened on Tuesday in Singapore was exceptional. We'll also get into some other news stories. Anyway, but I want to get right now into this FBI report, because it is nothing short of stunning, although not entirely unexpected. The entire issue here is a question of bias. Who was biased against whom? What role did bias play in the investigation, etc., etc.? And if you listen to the public commentary by the mainstream media, if you listen to the public commentary by the establishment swamp types, i.e. James Comey, you will listen to a common theme, refrain, set of words that all go something like this. There were 500 pages in the report, and no bias was found. I have heard that and read that probably 100 times in the last 24 hours. So what do you make of it? Well, first of all, you have to figure out what bias against whom. What does bias mean in the context of this report? And there are two separate issues. There's bias against Clinton, right? And there's bias against Trump, because this report addresses two separate investigations. The Clinton email scandal that was being investigated by a team of intrepid, independent, fearless FBI agents who spent, as best as I can tell, most of their time talking to reporters and going to paid junkets by various media companies. And then there's the witch hunt into Trump Russia. Many of the same players who first investigated and then recommended Clinton be exonerated ended up working on the Trump Russia scandal. But more on that in a few minutes. Now, I have to ask, if we're talking about bias against Clinton in the handling of her email probe, pray tell me, what kind of bias are we talking about? Because from my vantage point, I don't think I'm taking any crazy pills here. I think it was pro-Clinton bias. I mean, hell's bells. If you and I tried to do what she did after signing, I don't know, however many declarations and promises and oaths to keep our government secret safe and to follow, proper protocol and procedure in maintaining those secure lines of communication, where would we be? Well, I'll tell you, pick the nearest federal penitentiary to your house. Look it up. There's a website. That is where your A-money money would be sitting. Now, where did her A-money money sit? Well, it sat on the campaign trail. She was allowed to continue running for president. If I hear one more person in the media, look, I'm already getting hoarse and we've just started. If I hear one more person in the media tell me that this was a witch hunt against Hillary, I may just lose my, you know what? In no real world would her actions merit a recommendation of no prosecution. Yet that is exactly what happened here, and it happened here because they wanted her to win. Comey wanted her to win. All these FBI agents that are on the... You know what I don't see in this report? I don't see anywhere somebody going, yeah, you know, Trump's really got some great points, and Trump's a good guy, and Trump's this and that. And, you know, I see why, you know, maybe this country needs to turn around a little bit. No, I see a bunch of elitist, stuck-up, Ivy League-educated effers talking down to you and me, you know, since we're POSs, right, hanging out in, you know, in the rest of the country, flyover country, working our tails off, paying our taxes, and they know better. But nowhere in this report is any pro-Trump bias. So I don't know. Let's connect the dots. You've got Clinton, who's committed multiple felonies. She's exonerated. Now, I think the FBI had motivations in this order, not necessarily in this order, but the three primary motivations after reading everything in front of me here. It was to help Clinton, to hurt Trump, and to look good in the process. And the looking good in the process really explains a lot of Comey's weird, you know, weird stuff that he pulled. I call him sanctimonious Jim because he really is. He has to look like the goodest guy in the room. I know that's not a word, but I'm using it to make a point. He's just got to be, he has to be the choir boy. He wants to be the Boy Scout. He wants to be the fresh-faced law, Mr. Law and Order. And so how he was perceived in all of this was very important to him, which is why Comey routinely broke government protocol and wanted to have a speaking role in a play that was supposed to be a freaking pantomime. He's supposed to get, this is Kabuki, and he's out there doing a speaking role because he loves the sound of his voice. This guy's an insufferable moron. You think I'm joking? Okay, so there's a June 14th. God, yesterday, right? A New York Times op-ed piece written by none other than James Comey. Bro, if I were you, I'm talking to Comey right now. Give us a moment. If I were you, here's what I'd do. You could get indicted. You got real legal problems. Don't say another word. But no, not sanctimonious Jim. He gets out there, writes an op-ed piece for the friendly New York Times, where he basically had a bat phone from his cave going straight to the editor's desk. And what does he write? Oh, well, you know, this is a good thing for the FBI. I disagree with everything, but transparency is good. Pat myself on the back on here and this. And then exactly what I was talking about is this point. The inspector general, this is a direct quote. The inspector general's team went through the FBI's work with a microscope and found no evidence that bias or improper motivation affected the investigation. That is their talking point, and that's what you're going to hear, and it's absolutely not true. Yes, in one part of the report, the inspector general says, I can't connect the dots. I don't have direct evidence that somebody is put, that somebody put in writing saying, I hate Trump, ergo, I will do this. But I have news for you. Proving intent, and I'm saying this as a lawyer, proving intent does not require that kind of smoking gun evidence. You don't need that. There's this word, it's called inference. Inference. And you are allowed to, you're required to, for hell's bells, to connect dots. And so on one hand, you've got FBI agents saying Trump must be stopped at all costs. These are the communications between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And these, by the way, we're not talking about rank and file FBI agents here. These are high ups. Strzok is number three, I think, in the pecking order. It's Comey, McCabe, and Strzok. And McCabe, by the way, is one compromised guy, too. You remember his wife was running for public office somewhere in Virginia, I think. and was having fundraising dollars funneled to her, even though she was a total losing candidate. She was getting all this financing from Terry McAuliffe, who was the Clintons' bag man. Terry McAuliffe was the head of the DNC when the Clintons were in power back in the 90s. This is the what was that? That was a payoff, a literal payoff. And so Strzok, you got all these communications back and forth, other unnamed FBI agents and attorneys communicating back and forth. By the way, if you thought your workplace, if you're in Los Angeles or work, let's say, in a university, we have listeners here, loyal followers of the program that that work in hostile work environments. I know this. They're deep in anti-Trump territory, and so they quietly listen to this podcast as if it were Radio Free Europe beaming across the Iron Curtain, penetrating their dens of iniquity, wherever they may be. I am with you, my friends. So imagine you are hunkered down behind in your cubicle, and everywhere around you are a bunch of liberal dummies. And they, where how were they on November 9th? Were people crying in your office? I know I had somebody cry in my office November 9th. I had to console somebody. I told you that story. Well, anyway, this is how the FBI was. You would have thought that this was Paris on the day of the German invasion. And so they were consoling each other, and these texts are coming to light, and that's incidentally, that's the context for this POS quote. The liberals and the media and all of their cohorts believe that the FBI and Comey doomed Hillary Clinton's chances to become president. And they believe that that position of theirs is vindicated by this report. And everything else in it, they want to disregard. Now, first of all, we know that what doomed Hillary Clinton's chances of becoming president is Hillary Clinton. Okay? What doomed Hillary Clinton's chances was the Republican primary that picked the best candidate. And what doomed Hillary Clinton's chances was the fact that the Democratic National Committee rigged the election and put up the inferior candidate for president, leading to their loss. Now, even the FBI knew this, and this is why the quote that comes before the POS remark is actually the most important quote in the entire report. The most important quote is this. This is an unnamed FBI employee speaking to an unnamed FBI attorney, consoling him or her. We don't know the gender or identity of these persons. Consoling her. After the election, don't stress. None of that mattered. That's an apparent reference to the FBI's investigation of Clinton. When the attorney said, quote, I don't know, we broke the momentum, the employee answered, that is not so. And listen to this, friends, pay very close attention. Quote, all the people who were initially voting for her would not and were not swayed by any decision the FBI put out. And this is correct. This is true. You know, I don't know of a single Clinton voter that has, and I talked to a lot of people, and believe me, I talked to a lot of people that disagree with me. And I've asked this it's anecdotal, I understand, but I know what I'm doing. I'm a professional. You got to trust me. So I've talked to a bunch of, and when Clinton was exonerated, and then when they reopened it and she was cleared, none of that mattered to any Clinton supporters. And I don't think any of that mattered to Trump supporters either. I don't think it fired up Trump supporters any more than they already were. So I'll tell you, I think that this is actually extremely true here in the report. None of it mattered. It doesn't matter. Nobody was swayed by any decision the FBI put out. other part of the bias here, it's not just against Clinton, but it's Trump-Russia. I want to talk about this more when we come back, because basically, let me explain it to you. All these people that worked overtime on exonerating Hillary Clinton, then after the election, moved over to getting rid of Trump. And that is this Trump-Russia investigation. That is what led to the referral to Mueller. That is what has started this process that is now dragged on for 18 months. And we are here and now talking about, you know, you saw this, Manafort's going to jail. All of this is happening because these men and women of the FBI put politics above country, put politics above their oaths to fulfill their obligations impartially. This is not who we are. If it were reversed, if this were reversed, Republican, Democrat, I mean, all hell would break. CNN would be running with this story like you wouldn't believe. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
CNN, in its intrepid journalistic endeavors, is now following exactly the talking point that I described, which is there's 500 pages in the IG report and no evidence of bias or that it swayed the investigation. Listen here to an exchange by Chris Saliza and Don Lemon. This is on Thursday, yesterday on CNN.
Everything that Giuliani's talking about, it is hung on seven words from Peter Strzok in response to Lisa Page. She texts him and says, and this is unprofessional, she texts him and says, Donald Trump isn't going to win, is he? I'm paraphrasing. And he responds, no, no, we'll take care of it. Now, that's not how any of us want the FBI to work. At the same time,
we'll stop it. Right.
There's nothing that was found in the IG report, 500 plus pages, that suggests those seven words that Strzok typed out biased the investigation in any meaningful way.
Strzok was fired from the Mueller probe because of his bias. You know, where I come from, it's called the real world. When you get fired for cause, it means what it says. Strzok was fired for cause from the Mueller investigation to Trump Russia because his bias was material. This isn't some the absolute crazy way these people are mischaracterizing it just absolutely gets my goose. Well, I'll tell you the other part of this. The other part of the story, too, is the extent of leaking that was done by all of these agents. And this was also an effort to influence the election. OK, so I'll tell you this. If I see nothing but evidence of an anti-Trump bias, then I see that the election occurs, they're all depressed in the office. They're crying. They're going to the rallies. They're putting on their pussy hats. They're doing all that stuff. And they come back to work, wiping their tears. They go, now we have to do something. We must stop this. You think I'm making, wait, hold on. I got a quote for you. Just bear with me here. This is, where was this? Oh, it had to do with the progress. Now, there was a quote at any rate that they're talking about. I can't believe that the 8 years of hard. Oh, here it is. Attorney number two messaged the unnamed FBI employee, quote, I'm just devastated. I can't wait until I can leave today and just shut off the world for the next 4 days. He later added, oh, it's a he. Grow up, dude. I just can't imagine the systematic disassembly of the progress we made over the last 8 years. Obamacare is gone! Who knows if the rhetoric about deporting people, walls, and crap is true? I honestly feel like there's going to be I can't even keep doing this. I honestly feel like there's going to be a lot more gun issues, too. The crazies won. This is the Tea Party on steroids. And the GOP is going to be lost. They have to deal with an incumbent in 4 years. We have to fight this again. Also, Mike Pence is stupid. What the hell? Who are these people? Walls, deportations, guns, and Mike Pence is stupid. Oh, there's no bias, nothing to see here. Move along. No anti-Trump bias. Absolutely. We can trust these clowns to impartially prosecute any investigation into a collusion by Trump and his various associates with Russia. Right. This factors into the leaking business. Now you see the motivation, not just for the investigation itself, but also for all the leaks. From the report, we identified numerous FBI employees at all levels of the organization and with no official reason to be in contact with the media, who were nevertheless in frequent contact with reporters. The large number of FBI employees who were in contact with journalists during this time period impacted our ability to identify the sources of leaks. I don't believe that for a minute, do you? They can't trace that. Oh, there are too many leakers. We can't, you know, they can't fire them all because I don't know who they'd, you know, replace them with. Half the FBI would be gone. Why are they leaking? They're leaking to damage Trump presidency. They're leaking because they're members of the resistance. This is a shadow government. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just telling you, it's fact. There is a shadow government. We talk about the deep state. This is it. All right, don't go anywhere. Short break, and I'll be back. Sam Rogowski.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I fought the law and the law won.
Attorney Sam Rogowski reporting for duty again here doing our legal segment. I got to share the story from you with you from L.A., essentially my backyard here. Too close for comfort, but nevertheless, I'm about Orange County, 30 miles or so, 25 miles from the L.A. Border. And the story actually begins in a faraway place called Trudeau Land. Now, if you're not familiar with Trudeau Land, they're very famous for their maple syrup, their moose, and their eyebrows that periodically will retreat from their designated posts. If you don't know what I'm talking about, the G7 summit, pictures emerged of Trudeau. Trump made Trudeau sweat so bad that his fake eyebrows began crawling off of his face. I'm not making this up. Liberal media more or less disregarded this little fact and instead fixated themselves on how Trudeau looked taller than Trump at the meeting. Now, anyway, not to get into politics, we are on track for our legal segment, and this is the story. There is a talented clarinetist. His name is Eric Abramowitz. He's 20 years old, and he's dating a fellow musician, Jennifer Lee. They are both studying music at a place called McGill in Montreal, Canada. That's Montreal, for those of you from Yorba Linda. Okay. Now, Eric Abramowitz's dream, his dream of dreams, and we all have dreams. We have things that we want to pursue. His dream was to attend a school at the Colburn University of Music here in L.A. There, the school is particularly attractive to clarinetists because one of the world's greatest clarinet masters is a resident professor here, and his name is Yehuda Gilad. Now, Abramowitz, he traveled all the way to L.A. from Montreal and auditioned with Gilad. He had to play his clarinet. That's when you get up there. God, can you imagine the fright? It's like doing an exam. If you're a lawyer, imagine doing an exam in front of your professors, like standing over you, watching you write as you're, you know, pen to paper. And everything depends on it. Your entrance to a prestigious school, whatever it is. Crazy. So under that pressure, this guy goes in. He blows into his clarinet, produces a beautiful sound. Gilad loved him and sends him by email an offer of a $50,000 a year scholarship, along, of course, with the acceptance to the prestigious school. Here is where things got dicey. You see, Eric's girlfriend is a psycho. Now, I have a friend who's dating a psychotic woman, so I'm very familiar with how these things work. When you're dating a psycho, you don't know you have a psycho on your hands. It doesn't matter what your friends tell you. It doesn't matter what your loved ones tell you. You don't want to hear any of that. You're dating a psycho. And you don't find out until it's too late, which is what happened here. She saw the email, got jealous and worried that he would leave to L.A. Well, no, duh. He would go in there because this was his life dream, and deleted the email and all evidence of it. Now, I don't really know exactly what happened from there. I don't understand it. She posed as her boyfriend, rejected the offer, and deleted the entire chain of correspondence. She then actually created a fake account in the name of the school and sent her boyfriend a fake email saying he'd been rejected, so he wouldn't call the school and say, hey, what happened? And then she offers him a fictitious scholarship to a different school that he could not afford. And consoled him, says, don't worry, honey, we can stay in Montreal. I guess it all got out. And he sued her. He got a ton of money. He got like $300,000 Canadian dollars, which is, I think, maybe, what is that, $20 U.S.? And a moose dropping. That's right. $20 and moose caca. So that's a great lawsuit, right? Because you have fraud. There's all sorts of intentional interferences with business relations. It's a big deal. And he had loss of future earnings. Probably here in the States, he would have gotten more money. Is he going to collect a dime? That's a great question. No, because psychos typically have no money. Psychotic girlfriends are, it's a non-recourse deal. You just have to get out. You got to cut loose and write off your losses. And the sooner you do that, folks, the sooner you do that, the better off you are. Okay, a little more on this FBI thing. And then Nevada had a primary. Southern Nevada, I got to tell you about that. Robert De Niro. Yes, more on that. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rojofsky here, rarely wrong, always right, reporting the facts and colored commentary as necessary. Now, I'll tell you this, for every time that you hear the words 500 pages of report, no evidence of bias or affecting the outcome of any investigation, listen to these direct quotes from the report. Peter Strzok showed a, quote, willingness to take official action, close quote. Strzok's text, quote, is not only indicative of a biased state of mind, but even more seriously, implies a willingness to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral prospects. Now, this is in response to some communications about and his work on Hillary Clinton's email scandal. Of course, this is a no-brainer. We all get this, and we get it because we're connecting the dots. We see people that are obsessed with preserving and saving the country from Trump and supporting Hillary Clinton. And then these are the same people that are supposed to impartially investigate her? Well, I mean, if it were an impartial investigation, I don't know of any reasonable prosecutor out there, a former prosecutor who I trust. I mean, look, there have been people that have been charged with this crime for doing far less. The real story here is that Hillary Clinton was determined by these FBI agents going all the way up to Comey, if not Loretta Lynch and Obama himself. Clinton, it was determined, was too big to fail. She was no different than these crap banks that George Bush bailed out. Too big to fail. And so the same felonious conduct that would be fatal to you and I was determined to be a misstep. After the election, and I mentioned this before, and I read it. I read it with a hysterical voice, so I'm just going to remind you of this one more time here. That these two unnamed FBI agents, who one of them at least I know is a he, it seems from the report. They've both, by the way, been recommended for investigation, right, for potential prosecution. So these guys, they're not being named because they're subjects of an investigation. Not good. On November 9th, attorney number two messaged his colleague saying, "I am so stressed about what I could have done differently." Now, that's when the whole "don't stress about it, nothing you could have done, whatever" happens. And then attorney number two, that's when they call us Trump supporters, voters, lazy POSs, there's uneducated, you know, poor to middle class, right? That's who people are who voted for Trump, right? And then their feelings get out. "I'm just devastated. I can't wait until I can leave today and shut off the world for the next 4 days. I just can't imagine the systematic disassembly of the progress we made over the last 8 years. Obamacare is gone." Who knows if the rhetoric about deporting people, walls, and crap is true. I honestly feel like there's going to be a lot more gun issues too. The crazies, they've won. This is the Tea Party on steroids. And the GOP is going to be lost, and they have to deal with an incumbent in 4 years. An incumbent! We have to fight this again. Also, Mike Pence is stupid. When asked about the messages, attorney number two said the two were, quote-unquote, just discussing our personal feelings between friends. He also told the watchdog that the "so stressed about what could have been done differently" message referred to the length of time investigators took to examine Clinton emails found on pervy Anthony Weiner laptop. Now, I'm adding that color commentary as promised. Quote, "If we would have opened a few weeks earlier as opposed to that time 2 weeks before the election, I think, you know, it would have been more time for the FBI's actions required. And no, it's necessary investigation to allow the public a chance to make their own decisions." We've been told that nothing but the best and the brightest go to the FBI, right? These people are retarded. There's no other way about it. This is not why Hillary Clinton lost. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. Had nothing to do with this. Yes, she ought to be on trial. She ought to have had a jury decide. whether or not she was guilty of these things. But the long and the short of it is, she lost the election because she was a terrible candidate. But these people, this is how deep inside the bubble these people are. And they are still there. These people are still there. They're still working there. And what do you think they're doing? You think they're assisting Attorney General Jeff Sessions in moving forward the president's agenda? No chance in heck. All right, don't go anywhere. Back right after this. Oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about Nevada primary. This is a great race. This is the news we missed last week, and I have to make up for lost time. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rojofsky here. Okay, Assembly District number 36 in Las Vegas, Nevada is in the news. You're wondering, why the hell are we talking about a little district down in Nevada? Well, it's a little district with a big personality in it. They had a primary last week, and the GOP selected a pimp. Now, for those of you who are unaware of what a pimp is, ask your mother. No, that sounds terrible. I'm talking to my kids. I'm setting this up so they have to have an awkward conversation with my wife about this. Occasionally, I use words that they don't exactly understand. So, I'm in trouble. Okay. Dennis Hoff. He's an owner of about 12 legal brothels in Nevada, and he's a star of an HBO program that I've never seen. It's called Cat House. I really have never seen this. I'm not just saying that. But I will tell you, this is fascinating because he calls himself, well, he wrote a book. It was titled The Art of the Pimp. Of course, a play on Trump's book, Art of the Deal. And calls himself the Trump of Pahrump. You know, Pahrump, Nevada. I thought that was hilarious. Anyway, he had a rally with Roger Stone, and he just steamrolled right over his opponent, who was a hospital executive. So if you're in Pahrump, Nevada, hospital executives are boring, and famous pimps, you know, two thumbs up. Now, this guy, I have to tell you this, I don't have to look into a crystal ball. If any of you have been to Pahrump, Nevada, you know that we're dealing with some very conservative, plain-speaking people. And they actually like plain-speaking and straight-up more than they care about what your job is. If your job's legal, and in Nevada this is legal, and if you're a good businessman, they like you. So this person, I think he's running against some Democrat. Her name's Romanoff. She's a school teacher, a principal, you know, blah, 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 blah. He's going to win this. But he says something very interesting. He basically says, look, Trump paved the way for me to happen. And the media seized on this and says, of course, we don't care about morals anymore. We had Trump in there with Stormy Daniels and all these women. And he's just a disgusting slob and grabbing women by the you-know-what season. That's right. Trump has debased our culture. And this is not what Dennis Hoff meant. And it's also not what is true. And this is why Democrats are so lost right now. Poor Democrats wandering in the darkness. Because it's not that Trump is a gross guy and here we have a pimp who is following in Trump's lead. We have a brash, outspoken, plain-speaking guy who's connecting with voters. Because he's real. And I've said this now, I've been saying it for as long as I've been on the air in the context of the 2016 election and since. And that is, voters crave authenticity. And in the post-Bill Clinton era, where we all got over our moral scruples and were lectured by the left how putting cigars into women was like no big deal. Okay, we shrugged it off. We've moved on. The reason Bill Clinton won and won again was because he was authentic. The reason Obama won and won again was because he ran against losers. That's all there is to it. Even Bush, with his lack of polish and zero glibness, I think connected with a lot of voters because he was determined to be a real guy. That is what wins elections. And all of Nancy Pelosi's facelifts cannot save the Democratic Party from their authenticity problem. And that is the word. After the break, we're going to hit North Korea straight on with the Sam Nation ICBM missile. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss Sam Rogowski on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, hour number two of radio podcast greatness. Here we go. North Korea, I was coming home from office, headed up to my house, and it was about 6 p.m. my time, and I was speaking to my friend, and I was talking to Blake, who is a good guy, a close North Korea watcher, and devoted conservative. And Blake was at home, he was watching TV, and he was describing to me in real time what was happening. And I was racing home because I wanted to see the meeting. You know, when the clips get played afterwards, you don't get the proper chronological context for everything that happened. This is why I have a TV in my office. I've got it on mute and I've got it running because I like to see things as they're happening in real time. It puts me in a better place to be informed. So when I come here, I can give you the straight scoop. Well, at any rate, I was relying on a third party to relay to me the events as they were unfolding. And I got to tell you, even spoken through an intermediary, the absolute insanity and amazingness of what happened there cannot be underestimated. And what am I talking about? I replayed it. I had my TiVo running. Don't worry. I got it. I went back. I got home back in time so I could go back a full hour and I got everything. From the moment they first met publicly, body language had Trump moving Kim Jong-un around like he was a little boy. I mean, it was, but Trump was manhandling Kim and all the, I know all this talk about Trump saying Kim Jong-un is a great negotiator and a strong leader and all this stuff. And the press is going bananas over it. It's berserk. He's flattering our sworn enemies and talking down to our allies. Oh, who the hell is this Trumpster? What is he? Who the hell does he think he is? This is all show, folks. This is all part of the strategies. Blowing smoke up is a money money. Meanwhile, the body language says it all. And I saw it. I went, but this is the first comment that that my friend said as he was watching. He goes, he's getting manhandled. Speaking of Kim Jong-un. Now, a lot of the analysis, principal point I want to make to you, because if there's no takeaway but this one, you've got to remember this. The principal analysis of how this all went down is wrong and is flawed. And we don't have the time in the context of an hour here to go through all the points, but I think there's a we can take snippets of different moments in this, in the analysis, to illustrate the greater point. And one of the articles came out just this morning, today, Friday, in the Washington Post, about Trump nearly upending the summit with abrupt changes. Now, the abrupt changes that Trump was asking to do was he wanted to move the summit. He got there. He wanted to move the summit up a day. This hasn't been talked about very much. So you're getting this here first. He wanted to move the summit up a day. And that was the day that Kim Jong-un, a.k.a. Mop Top, was going around Singapore insufferably taking in the sights of a wealthy first world country. So Kim Jong-un gets there. He flies in on Air China because an old POS airplane wouldn't have made it. He flies in on a commercial airliner, shows up, gets into his limo, and then has a sightseeing day, a tourism day. The Washington Post, who hates Trump, basically says that Trump got there and became impatient and bored and wanted to move the meeting up. Quote, after arriving in Singapore on Sunday, an antsy and bored Trump urged his aides to demand that the meeting with Kim be pushed up a day. Trump's impatience, coupled with a tense staff-level meeting between the two sides, left some aides fearful that the entire summit might be in peril. Now, I'm reading this, and it's exactly what I keep telling you. They don't get what Trump is all about. They don't understand that in the real world, the one I live in, the one you live in, there are various techniques used in negotiations to mess with your opponent, moving around meeting times, moving around last-minute location times. Messing with the heads of your opponent is everything. It is especially everything when you've got a mozzarella ball, you know, for an opponent. You got this kid. He's a kid. He's younger than me. I think I'm pretty young still, for now. But he's a kid. And this is by far the most high-profile, stressful thing he's ever done. I guarantee it. You see, it's very easy. Imagine you're Kim Jong-un. Very easy to hide behind state media and the state apparatus and your secret police and everything when you're in North Korea. Everything is staged. But here, all of a sudden, it can't be staged. There's media here that he doesn't control. This is a first. I think this is, since he became a leader of North Korea, this is the first time that you have Kim Jong-un outside of his bubble. And when he goes to China, I mean, that's a state-run system, right? Totalitarian state. He's outside of the bubble. And any jiu-jitsu move that you do is absolutely spot on. So that is just a vignette of how everything that Trump was doing around this event is mischaracterized. Now, the press predictably is just, and liberals, right, the various politicians right now are just up in arms about this. Here's just a brief montage of some of the silly, silly things that we've heard this week on the North Korea deal. These are notable Democrats, Chuck Schumer, Bob Menendez, MSNBC journalist Nicole Wallace, and Elise Jordan.
What the United States has gained is vague and unverifiable at best. What North Korea has gained, however, is tangible and lasting.
I have to be honest with you, this is the weakest statement I have ever seen come out of any engagement with North Korea.
It is not knowable that we'll ever know what happened in that meeting, because both men are known and established liars.
I would say it's somewhat disgusting. It is actually a debasement of the American flag.
Yeah, now they're concerned about the American flag, by the way. This is good. New position. Let me ask you this. What do you make of the whole assertion that it was a vague agreement? What do you make of the assertion that the agreement that we gave up everything and they gave up nothing? Because these are the real issues here, right? Well, this is the meat of it. We talk about vagueness. Yeah, the agreement is vague. Of course. It's the first step. I don't know, generally speaking, you try in a first mediation to get to some place that you can then resume from and not have to start over. So they agreed on a framework. And the exchange, as I can see it, is denuclearization for security. That was the exchange. Now, that seems like a pretty good deal to me, and it actually seems to conform with exactly everything I've been saying here for months now, which is North Korea is concerned with regime preservation. Kim Jong-un was seriously worried that Trump would push a button, not nuclear button, but figuratively pick up the phone, call General Mattis, and say, go! And like the Japanese, before Pearl Harbor, Tora, Tora, Tora. And next thing you know, the North Korean country, Pyongyang, would be turned into a parking lot. Because that's what Mattis would do. North Koreans quickly assess that Trump is unpredictable. They quickly assess that Trump might just do it, that Trump was not one given to conventional political norms, and that he had at his disposal a general who meant what he said and said what he meant. They didn't like this. Combined with intel on the ground from South Korea, of U.S. diplomats moving out and sending their families back home, they were crapping their pants. They want security. Now, the war games thing, there's some dispute as to whether we actually canceled war games here and now. But here's what I got to tell you about war games. If one side is blowing up and destroying their permanent facilities for nuclear developing, building, storing, housing, whatever, nuclear weapons, and the other side is canceling war games, which one of those can very quickly be resumed one day to the next? I'm pretty sure that those bombers in Guam can fly over in 8 hours. I'm also, at the same point, fairly certain that the bunker that housed the development facility can't just be rebuilt in a day. Yes, I don't trust the North Koreans one bit. I don't. But guess what? I trust Bolton, and I trust Mattis, and I trust Trump, even, to hold them accountable in a way that no other administration has done to date. And it's that trust I have in that team, this is why Kim Jong-un came to the table. Did it legitimize Kim Jong-un? I don't know. I thought he looked weak and pathetic. He's a fatty with a terrible haircut. He is. He didn't look good next to Trump. He didn't look like a man that was in charge. He looked like a kid out of his element. He looked stupid. Trump pulled him out of his bubble. Look, for Trump, being in a luxury hotel in Singapore, that's home turf. All right. Trump's an international guy, traveled the world, had a giant jet for most of his life. He's a well-traveled guy. For him to go to Singapore, that's not a big deal. But for Kim Jong-un to leave behind all of his props, his environment, he's the guy that's out on a ledge. Now, any negative angle of the media, this is another great example here. This is where the press again gets Trump's. They don't understand Trump's motivation. Chris Hayes talking to Rachel Maddow, tusking about how Trump just doesn't care and he's in it just for the glory, just for the headlines, just to win, and doesn't care about you and I, America, and the rest.
Other people are burdened by caring. Shinzo Abe. Other people are burdened by a set of conceptions of their fidelity or duties to the state they represent. He is kind of unburdened by that. And so you've got a situation now where I don't think anyone thinks that Donald Trump cares in some deep way, just as a person, whether about the substance of the matter. Like, is there verified denuclearization? Is there a move towards liberalization?
Or are any of the human rights issues that Nick was talking about? I imagine him making that case.
Right. He cares about the headlines, and everyone knows that who's on the other side of the table from it.
This is so wrong. It's such a blatant lie. It actually makes me angry. Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow are speaking to just their liberal crazy base, and the only people tuning in, they don't even, by the way, on the last Nielsen ratings, they didn't even come up, okay? They weren't even on the top 10 list. If Hannity was 5.4 million a night and Tucker Carlson was somewhere in the fours, I mean, it went all, I saw the list, it went all the way down to 1 million viewers, and no MSNBC show was on there. So just, nobody's even listening to you clowns. Now, producer Robbie here stepped up and found a clip back from 1999, Donald Trump talking to Wolf Blitzer on CNN. This is before he ran for president. This is 9 years ago. 19 years ago, excuse me, you're right. 19 years ago. Talking to CNN, here's what he said.
North Korea is totally out of control, and would you rather have a very, very serious chat with them now, and if necessary, you might have to do something fairly drastic, or would you rather have to go after them in 5 years when they have more nuclear warheads and missiles than we do?
What if the North Koreans don't play ball, develop a nuclear ability, go forward with their missile development? Does the United States act unilaterally?
Excuse me. If spoken to correctly, they will play ball.
Almost 20 years ago, to the day, he said this on CNN. Now, to me, consistency is a big thing, right? I understand people in their 20s, you know, feel differently than people in their 40s. But people in their 50s oftentimes are set, right? So Trump in his 50s is saying the same thing as Trump in his 70s. And if there's anything I know about Trump, it's he cares and loves for this country deeply. In a way, leftists don't, because leftists, the left is more concerned about winning their ideological battle with Trump than about doing what's right for this country. And this is true from immigration to foreign policy to the economy and everything in between. The left wants to give away the store. They want to give away our sovereignty. They want to give away everything America is in pursuit of their own crazy ideology. Now, Trump is not an ideologue, but he is an American that loves his country. And I know that for sure. More on this when we come back. Trump even gets some uncharacteristic praise from a sworn enemy. I'll tell you who that is. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
You know, I think one of the ways to contextualize some of this waffling by the left and the media on the North Korea Trump issue is that suddenly people who are normally not skeptical at all have become hyper skeptical in analyzing the North Korean summit, right? Because what you have is you've got a bunch of liberals now becoming John Bolton hawks talking on the media about, this is very scary. Does Trump realize that North Korea is a scary place? Does he realize that Kim Jong-un does not mean what he says? Does he know that he might be getting played? And these are the same people that 3 weeks ago were crying all over the media about the Iran deal. How dare could Trump be such a hawk? He should be friends with Iran. The Iranians mean well. Right? There's no consistency here. Now you're going to say, well, what's good for the goose, right, Sam? I mean, is there any consistency with Trump? And the consistency with Trump is, I think he's being tough on North Korea. I think he threatened them with annihilation. I don't know what else you want. And by the way, that fact is largely undisputed since, well, 3 months ago. This is all we were talking about, as even his critics acknowledge. And one of them, former DNI James Clapper, this is director of intelligence. He was Obama's guy and a total deep state schlub. You've heard us talk about him many times. This is a guy who has orchestrated spying on Trump's campaign. He's trying to make nice to Trump, which I may analyze a little bit later. But here's what Clapper says.
My observation, certainly when I was there, was the North Koreans were clearly stuck on their narrative and we were kind of stuck on ours. Mm-hmm. And emblematic of that were the talking points that I was assigned to recite to the North Koreans. First one of which was, you must denuclearize before we'll talk to you. Well, that was a non-starter. So President Trump, to his credit, has changed that narrative, I think. And in a dilemma like this, only the bigger partner, meaning the U.S., could do that. So that's a good thing. And we're in the diplomatic lane as opposed to where we were headed, say, 6 months ago or so. So that's a good thing.
Well, 6 months ago, where we were headed 6 months. What was that? Where were we headed 6 months ago? I said 3 months ago, but, you know, 3 months ago, even. The press is screaming about Trump being a warmonger. The press is screaming about Trump needing to go easy on North Korea. What is he trying to do? Is he trying to start World War III? I mean, what the hell? Trump's crazy, man. What the media needs to do is stop reacting to things in an immediate context of a 24-hour news cycle. Trump is playing the long game here. And that is why I think all these characterizations of him as being an impatient, a childish figure are wrong, because I see in this strategy. Now, it is either an accidental byproduct of somebody who is insane, which it can only work for so long, but it can't work every time, can't be the case every time. Or you actually have a guy who is coming off as insane, especially to people who want to interpret less favorable characteristics or attributes, but is in fact quite the evil genius that is working up a scheme that is running, doing end runs around his enemies. So this is Clapper actually saying, yeah, look, Obama sent me there. When Obama sent me to North Korea, we were stuck in our narrative. Because this is how exactly Obama operated. Here, Clapper, here's your talking points. You go over there and say, you must denuclearize and we won't talk to you before you do. This is how Obama dealt with Congress, too. Remember this? You're going to do what I say, or I'm not even going to let you in the White House. The congressmen have been there 30 years. Like, you know, screw off, pal. Like hell, I'm going to help you. Classic Obama. Trump is a negotiator. And he's using the same media. He's using the same media that Reagan used in effect to get his message out. Because Reagan said all these kind of made all these bombastic pronouncements, and the press called him a cowboy. Remember this? Oh, a cowboy! He's a loose cannon, everything. But he used that to psych out his enemy. Now I'm gonna talk more about North Korea when we come back. I got a couple more sound bites, but we're gonna do our funny segment. We're gonna stick to the clock here, bottom of the hour. Do our funny segment. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back with you in just a minute. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, Friday funny segment takes us to Wisconsin and has nothing to do with poop for a change. There's a guy in Wisconsin, and his name is Jack Rasmussen. Now, he lives in a place called Bloomer, which sounds like a very exciting hot spot with a number of very fine dining options. Now, I bring up the fine dining options for a pointed reason, and I'll get to that in a second. You see, Jack Rasmussen had an outstanding warrant for his arrest. Apparently, he jumped bail twice on two different charges. This is when you post bail and then show up at court when you're called in to appear. So they take your money and they put out a new warrant for you. And this time you're not getting it back out on bail, right? Once you've jumped bail, you're going to jail, and you're going to jail until you serve out your sentence if you're convicted. All right. So the cops show up at his house. They say they announce themselves and they say they need to talk to him. Now, he knows this is bad news, right? He knows he's already jumped bail. This guy does not want to go to prison. So he gets into his car, he jumps into his car and drives away. Now, typically, when people are driving away like this, they have a goal in mind. And the goal for most people in this situation, I assume this would be freedom. There's some irrational thought that they're going to make it away and get loose and then live off grid for the next 30 years. But some things are better than freedom. This guy must be a Democrat, because this guy was willing to trade his freedom for golden arches. Can't make this stuff up. He led police on a high-speed chase straight to the local Bloomer McDonald's, where he ran and police instructed him to put his hands up and to stand still. But he said, I am not going to be in handcuffs until I get some McDonald's. The police officers that were following him in the chase had gone to arrest him, had a call for backup, and eventually was apprehended. The article that I have here and other articles I examined were not exactly clear on whether he did get his McDonald's or did not. I think if I were a responding officer, I think this whole thing would be so funny. I'd buy him the damn McDonald's. I want to know if this was breakfast. Now, was this breakfast McDonald's? Was he... And by the way, the guy, I mean, pictures, you know, but this guy looks totally normal. I'm looking at this guy and he could be a soccer. He could be your kid's soccer coach. Just looks like a normal, 50-year-old guy. He might end up spending 6 years, 9 months in jail based on his sentence. So that is, I guess, a long time to go without McDonald's. If McDonald's is what you crave, you know, when they talk about impulse control. And they talk about, we've got an opioid crisis and people are on drugs and the things that are addictive in our lives. This is how bad the In-N-Out, this is how bad the McDonald's addiction is. In-N-Out, how could I even say that? I'm projecting. You're right, because I'll tell you what. If I was facing 6 years in jail, I might consider making one last In-N-Out run. Oh my God. I'll tell you, dead serious. If I had to pick a last meal, an In-N-Out burger, no onions, add extra pickle, light spread, cheeseburger, and a nice wine. I told you this, right? How I love an In-N-Out burger. Try this sometimes. In-N-Out cheeseburger pairs very well with the French Bordeaux, or maybe like a slightly earthy California cab. But In-N-Out will let you bring booze into the store, so it creates a problem. You've got to go and get the takeout order, and then In-N-Out's so fresh it doesn't travel well. So you have to speed home with the In-N-Out to maintain its freshness. I have a buddy who works there, and I'm trying to con him into getting me just a one person liquor license. So when I go to my In-N-Out, I can bring a bottle of wine and enjoy the burger. Now, Matt, now you know what I want for my birthday. Okay. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Great question. What's the internet quirkage fee? You know, think about this. They could make some coin on this. They let people bring their wines. You know, if I started a trend and began bringing my cellar to In-N-Out instead of bringing In-N-Out to my cellar, I could, you know, perhaps this could be a revenue stream. Wink, wink. Okay, North Korea. McDonald's, actually. Speaking of McDonald's, you know, one of the things that Trump showed Kim Jong-un is that they could bring McDonald's to North Korea, which is particularly hilarious, offering a fast food chain to a population that is largely starving. But, you know, Trump knows his audience. He's looking at this guy and he goes, this is a guy that would love McDonald's. I don't know. I could... Everybody's laughing at Trump for that CIA video, but I was, and we were talking about it here. I think the video that came that Trump came with, you know, that showed a redeveloped Pyongyang and how the country could be wealthier is very effective. Kim Jong-un, you got to remember, he was educated in Switzerland. He's lived in the West. He likes nice things. He's got this crazy embargo and these big sanctions that are really preventing nice things from being imported for even his own benefit. So he's imagining himself, he's got two doors. As long as Trump is president, door number one, I don't play ball, I get annihilated. Door number two, I don't get annihilated. I have to give up my nukes, but I have a security agreement in place with the U.S. so they're not going to attack me. Okay. And in exchange, I potentially open up my country for development, which brings in more money. Sanctions start to go away after time. I have more money. I get to import more goodies from the West without restriction. And I'm going to become a wealthier, happier guy. Now, at 30, I think he's got many more years to live than his father. And this is why I think there's an opportunity to do something now with Kim Jong-un than there wasn't with his father, Kim Jong-il. You know, I know a lot of religious people who are older, and I know a lot of religious people who are younger. And the key difference between religious people who are old and those that are young is the old ones talk about the afterlife because they're getting to a stage in their life where the And I, you know, whatever their belief system is, they invest heavily into sort of the fatalism, right? They talk a lot about, well, this is my experience, but they talk a lot about things like the end of the world and the rapture. And this is my casual observation. Now, why am I bringing this up? When you deal with an old, on his way out of here dictator, that guy's far more likely to start World War III than his son, who's in his 30s, and who wants to enjoy a long, prosperous life. This is why the old dude Ayatollah, you know, in Iran scares me far more than some young zealot. Yeah, the young zealot might, you know, have his beliefs and this and that, but he still has a life to live. And I think this is something that can be exploited. So showing off that video and enticing Kim Jong-un with economic development is a real plus. So this is all true. Now, speaking of Iran, while the media is trash-talking Trump about how he's just got all sorts of, he's out to lunch on this thing. He's being too naive when it comes to North Korea and not being skeptical. And then he's being too skeptical when it comes to Iran. There's this piece from the Associated Press. Iran, spurned by U.S., angrily watches Trump North Korea talks. This is from the Associated Press. The first line of this is everything you need to know. For Iran, the so-called axis of evil has boiled down to a party of one. As President Trump prepares for direct talks with North Korea. You see, all this madness has a strategy. At the same time that Trump tore up the nuke deal with Iran, He is making nice and co-opting North Korea. It is isolating Iran. At the same time, building a strategic alliance with Saudi Arabia and with Israel, making friends in the Middle East and other countries. If I were Iran, I would be crapping bricks right now. Sweating bullets, whatever the expression is. I would be really worried because the noose is tightening, Ayatollahs. Watch yourself before you wreck yourself. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
I think none of you probably watched the Emmys, Golden Globes, whatever the hell that was. What was that award show in New York where De Niro got up and trashed Trump again? Tonys. Nobody cares. See, I don't care. Nobody cares. These shows are all for industry people anyway, and the public, by and large, yawns when they happen. But this particular award show got some headlines, right, because De Niro got up and said, F Trump. And the best part about it is the camera panned the audience and everybody was just clapping. And oh, yes, 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 you go, Bobby. None of this is important. What I, as an observer of the media, enjoy are media reactions. And my favorite one came on June 11th, a day after the awards show. And the title from the Associated Press in New York is this, and can't even make this up. Quote, a theme of tolerance, comma, inclusion at this year's Tony Awards. Literally, the only news story that came out of the Tony Awards that got any press was a lead Hollywood actor saying F the president. And hard driving analysis of it is that there was a theme of tolerance and inclusion. The left is delusional, folks. They are delusional, and delusional people lead themselves astray. They don't even need any help from their opponent. If they keep this up, 2018 is going to be a Democratic bloodbath, not the other way around. If they keep this up, 2020 is in the bag faux show for Trump. Theme of tolerance, inclusion, my butt. All right. There's another little news story I wanted to get to. I will address the New York Attorney General suing President Trump and his family next week. We will get to this. Not enough time to handle everything. I know it was a busy news week. I'll give you a quick spoiler alert on that, though. This is boring. This is so boring. And this is so politically motivated. And I'll bring you the developments next week. But just I'll comment on it on Twitter during the week. So if you need my live fire analysis at Sam Nation, and I'll have it there. Okay. Do you remember Rand Paul getting beat up by his neighbor? You remember the story? First, we were told it was a political assault, that it was a political discussion they were having, that the neighbor did not like libertarians and decided to attack one of the country's most famous libertarian leaning politicians. But now we know much more about it. The neighbor in question is a retired anesthesiologist. And I have a good friend who's an anesthesiologist, but most anesthesiologists are really quite depressed and deranged people. I'm not saying that in general, but they show up, they do their thing, then they leave, and there's other doctors that perform the main surgery. And so there's a little bit of there's a weird dynamic. A lot of weird people doing anesthesiology. So this guy wins the cake. His name is René Boucher. That's if he's from Montreal. If he's not from Montreal, we'll call him René the Butcher, which is what I'm going to call him, because he beat the crap out of Senator Rand Paul, sent him to the hospital, very severe injuries. Do you know what this conflict was all about? This guy pled guilty, by the way, and is now going to be sentenced. He's begging for a lenient sentence, no jail time. Here's what happened, according to him. Apparently, Rand Paul would cut branches in his yard. He does his own yard work, which I think is cool. It's a U.S. senator. He's doing his own yard work. Okay, so he would cut the branches on his property and put them all in a pile on their property line. So you have a neighbor that kind of keep their house untidy and you look at it and it annoys you? Sure. I mean, I get that. I get it. So Rene Boucher, a.k.a. Rene the Butcher, he got a dumpster and took all the branches himself and dumped them. Well, Rand Paul just added more branches to the same spot. And that pissed off Rene, and he went and got another dumpster and threw those branches out. Well, what do you think happened? Rand Paul again comes in and puts branches in the same spot. And this is where the article from the Slatist just absolutely, who writes this? Molly Olmsted. Molly, this is where I became a fan of your work. Quote, on November 2nd, Boucher hit some kind of limit with his patience. He poured gasoline on the pile of debris and set it on fire. The resulting fireball gave him second-degree burns on his arm, neck, and face. Now, look, it's because I know what comes next is why I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at him getting burns. I'm not a horrible person, but I'm laughing because what comes next, folks, is this. Quote, the next day, Paul, possibly underestimating the depths of his neighbor's rage, used his lawnmower to blow leaves from his property onto Boucher's. And then, quote, during this process, Rand Paul stepped away from his lawnmower, gathered several branches from an adjacent pile of trash, and placed them in the exact location where the last pile had burned just one day prior, close quote. Well, Rene the Butcher snapped. Of course, you create a pile, you haul it away. The guy creates another pile, you haul it away. The guy creates another pile, you burn it, but in the process, you burn your whole body. And then the very next day, the guy starts putting branches on the same exact spot. Oh, my goodness. This is too good. Rand Paul's office says it's not true, that all of it's made up. I want to believe that this is true. And it actually doesn't make me like Rand Paul any less. I bet this Rene Boucher guy is just insufferable. Have a great weekend. Findable. It's there. See you next week. Love you guys. Keep going.